Okay. I had a request last week. Jason said, do the story. So we're going to do the story. I do your request. I play request.
Good thing I came.
What?
Good thing I showed up.
Yeah, well, okay. Yeah. If you hadn't, I had a whole different thing planned. So what I'd like to do is the following. I'd like to, over the course of this half of this 14 minutes or so, kind of draw the contours of what the main body of the Haggadah is and look at kind of how it developed and how it got there and what it, that history recommends that we should actually be doing at the Seder. So we're going to start with source one. Source one is the Mishnah. And the Mishnah tells us actually very little about what we're supposed to do. It gives us three instructions. And the Mishnah goes as follows. Mazgulo kots sheni. They pour the second cup, which as we discovered in another shiur, this would happen in the times of the Beit HaMikdash after the meal. But right now, we're not looking at relationship to the meal. V'chena ben shoel. All right, so they pour the second cup, and the kid now asks, whatever he asks, im ein dat baben aviv melamdo. Now, that's important for understanding the background of this. If the kid doesn't have the capability, then the father teaches him. It seems to me the father teaches him something to ask, how to ask, or the father has to initiate the discussion. All right. And then we have Manishtana, and then Lafida Toshel Ben Avim Malamdo. And again, Manishtana we did at length and in detail in the Monday Shir. And it was interested, just, you know, check it out on the podcast. But we now get instructions, and the instructions are Lafida Toshel Ben Avim Malamdo. The father must teach based on the kid's knowledge, ability, attitude, all three of them. And by the way, when we go back to the issue of the hypothetical or theoretical four sons, you find that among the three who actually ask questions, all of those components are there. Meaning, what is a chacham? How would you define a chacham? So you could define a chacham by knowledge or by cognition, cognitive ability, or by interest. He's interested in studying. He has a wide knowledge base that you can build on, or he's sharp. How would you define the one that we typically call the third kid? So in our Haggadah, he's called Tam, which seems to indicate something like it's a little soft. But in the other sources, he's actually called Tipesh. And Tipesh can be that he's not able to process stuff, or it could be that he just doesn't have a knowledge base. So we have the whole range there. And of course, Rasha is all about attitude. And so Lefida Tosha Laben Avim Malamdo could mean you have to, and it's, all three are true, you have to craft your telling to the knowledge base of the child. You don't want to bore him. You don't want to tell him stuff he already knows. You also don't want to talk way over his head and talk to four-year-olds about the existential meaning of freedom and what ontology really means in the work of Rudolf Otto. Not going to be for four-year-olds. Not going to work. It also means that you have to speak to him at his ability level. And the other thing, or slightly above his ability, to make him stretch. And the third thing is you got to speak to him attitudinally, meaning if his attitude is one of great interest, that's one thing. If his attitude is one of resentment, you got to deal with it differently. Okay, good. Matchil b'gnut m'sayim b'shevach. The second rule of Haggadah is you start by describing the disgrace and you end with the praise. Now, why would that be the rule? So the answer is there's three reasons for that rule, all of them valid. By the way, number three is our big number this year. First of all, because that's the order it happened in. The story that we're telling is a story of going from a bad situation to a good situation. So tell the story in order. Now, that sounds like an obvious thing, but it's not so obvious. If you think about it, when people tell a story, often they'll say, oh, I forgot to mention. And they go back and fill in the blanks. And sometimes when they do that with a joke, it's terrible. The joke has a punchline. It all depends on the background. And they tell you, and they don't laugh, say, oh, did I mention that the cab driver was fat? No, otherwise that makes sense. Robert, you might remember that one. The story has to be told in order because for the story to have meaning, it has to be in order. Okay, that's first of all. Second thing, matzil begnut b'sem b'shavach is part of the fidato shel ben, meaning you're an infotainer tonight. You have to be giving information, but you have to be entertaining about it. And you also want everyone to both be engaged and also leave the segment of storytelling feeling good. So therefore, you don't want to end up on a downer. You don't want to end up, and then we went out to the midbar, and out in the midbar, we nearly died and stopped there. Right? You want to end up with a good ending. The third thing is that the ultimate goal of the evening is Hallel. The ultimate goal of the evening is a thing of singing. We talked about that a couple weeks ago with the Shirat, with the Kosot. And as such, you want to push towards that. So you want to start slow and build up to where you get very excited at the end. And everybody's jumping up and down, screaming hots and flots all over the place. And then they start singing. So you want to move up. Okay. And then the last rule, the one that impacts on us for today's shiur, is v'doresh me arami oved avi ad shehu gomer kol ha-parasha. So how would you translate the word doresh? By the way, and this line in the Mishnah sets the text for most of the Haggadah. What does doresh mean? How would you translate that?
Explain.
Expound. Right. Okay. Good. Sermonize. From Arami Oved Avi until you finish the entire parsha. By the way, that's not true. We don't do that. And that line may be taken from somewhere else. But Doresh Me Arami Oved Avi. Now, let's take a look at what Arami Oved Avi is. And surprise, 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 it is a context that has nothing to do with Pesach and nothing to do with Yetziat Mitzrayim. And it is a context which we actually avoid the actual context, as you'll see. The Torah tells us in Deuteronomy chapter 26, the beginning of Kitavo, that when we come to the land that Hashem gives us, you take the first fruits of the land, that you bring it to the place, you put it in a basket, you bring it to the place that Hashem has chosen to put his name, and you come to the Kohen, and you tell him, I am now confessing before God that I've come to the land that he swore to give to our ancestors to give to us. And the Kohen takes the basket from your hand, and he puts it in front of the Mizbeach, and then you shall respond with the following. Now you see it in big print. This is Arami Oved Avi, all right? And you're supposed to recite approximately seven verses. Here we go. Arami Oved Avi, six verses. Arami Oved Avi, which means my father was a wandering Aramean. Arami Oved Avi. Vayered Mitzrayma, and he went down to Egypt. Vayagor Shamim Temiat, he sojourned around there. He hung around there. He didn't settle down with a very small group. Vayisham the Goy Gadol Atzum Varav. Now, he became there a great nation, a powerful nation, and a populous nation. We're going to look at that. We're going to use that as one of our focal points in the Shiur. But notice what we've done here. We're talking about a wandering Aramean as an ancestor. Which ancestor is that?
Avram.
So the simple reading is Avram. Avram is from Aram. That's where he was born. And he wandered around and he ended up in Egypt. And by the way, Israel's not even mentioned here. Meaning the fact that he came to Israel, that was the land, and then he had to leave because of a famine, right? And he didn't really come here and all these things happened to him. He came here and then he left with the same amount of kids, zero, as he had when he came. And then who was the next wandering Aramean who came down to the land? And this is true about
him. Yaakov.
Yaakov. So now, so what's happening here? Is it Avram or is it Yaakov? The answer is yes. Now I'll explain what I mean. What we're reading is a particular genre of text in Tanakh known as a historiography. Known as a historiography. All right, in a sec, I'm going to see what I'm going to do here. Okay. All right, there we go. Good. And what we have here is something that we call a historiosophy. Historiosophy literally means a telling of history about wisdom. What it means is that you're retelling a history with a particular agenda. Now, we're going to take a step back and be honest. All history has an agenda. Any history book has an agenda. Every historic retelling has an agenda. That's true. But usually the agenda is broad-based and is either part of the collective consciousness of the people or else is in the subconscious of the author. And if you were asking, he would say, no, I don't have any particular feelings about Abe Lincoln. I'm just trying to tell the story, but he turned Abe Lincoln into a god. But there's a historiosophy where it's explicitly and deliberately focused towards a message. And in telling a historiosophy, history gets conflated. Events of hundreds of years get pushed into one word or one phrase. Characters from different times come together, because the purpose is not for historic retelling of events, the way we think of history, but it is a message. Examples of this, the last chapter of Yoshua, which, by the way, we mentioned in the Haggadah. We have three psukim from Yoshua at the beginning of the Haggadah about that your ancestors were idol worshippers, and I took Avram and I brought him down and I gave him Yitzchak, and then Yaakov went down to Egypt, which leads to this. That's a historiosophy. If you read it, you see that the whole experience of coming to Egypt and God taking us out of Egypt, getting through the desert, happens in like one verse. And all the stuff is conflated. And the same thing happens here. So who's Arami Oved Avi? Avram, or is it Yaakov? The answer is yes. And what it means is that our family roots started in Aram, and somehow we ended up making our way down to Egypt. And when we were in Egypt, we were sojourning there as a small group, and there we became this big nation. Okay. Vayareu otano mitzrim vayanunu. And the Egyptians dealt badly with us. Is that true? Yes, it's true, but way later. After we had come down and settled in, and we were treated like near kings, and in later generation, we then were treated badly. And they put hard work on us, hard labor on us. What did we do? We cried out to God. I'm not so sure that that's accurate in the historic record. If you read Sefer Shemot, you do not find the people crying out to God, except when they're on the banks of the Yam Suf and think they're going to drown, and they complain. And when they complain about water, and when, right? And those complaints aren't really directed towards Hashem, they're directed towards Moshe. So it's interesting that we're retelling it and we're reshaping it, that we cried out to Hashem, the God of our fathers. Vayishma Adonai kolenu, that's right there in Shemot, God heard our voice. Vayaret onyenu v'tamalenu l'chasenu, he saw our pain and our suffering and our pressure. And then what happened? Vayotzienu Adonai mimitzrayim biyad chazaka uzron tuyav mora gadol, God took us out of Egypt with a strong hand, an outstretched arm, and great fear. Or awe, uvototu uvtim, signs and wonders. Okay, so those four psukim, which are in big print, starting with the near the beginning of the pasuke, summarize the experience of going to Egypt and getting out. And to summarize them into a one-word summary for each of these verses, I would call the first verse, galut. And the second one, avdut. So exile and oppression, or slavery. The third one is tefillah, and the fourth one is ge'ulah. That's an easy thing to remember. So now we can put the whole Haggadah into four words. Make people a lot happier, right? And get to eat quicker. Galut, avdut, tefillah, ge'ulah. Boom. But of course, this is a story of all of Jewish history. And that's part of what we tell during the evening. But we read these four psukim, but we're doresh these four psukim. But remember, the Mishnah said, ad shugomer kol ha'parsha. Kol ha'parsha is in front of you, and the rest of it's in small print because we don't incorporate it into the Seder for some reason. Let's see if we can figure out the reason. What's the fifth pasuk the guy's supposed to say?
Rabbi?
Yeah.
Can I quickly ask, the beginning of these verses, Arami Oved, so a common translation is, an Aramean tried to destroy my forefather.
Right. So that's a Midrash, which we're going to get to in a couple minutes. The literal translation of the word, if you look into a proper translation of the of Deuteronomy, not of the Haggadah, you'll see it says, my father was a wandering Aramean. What are you looking at right now?
The Art Scroll translation.
Okay, good. So look at a more scholarly translation, if you will, right? That's not driven by Midrash, but driven by Pshat. Uh-huh. You see consistently the translation is, my father was a wandering Aramean.
Right. So right. I guess with this translation, some people think of Levon.
Yeah, we're going to get to that. That's
okay.
That's what we're going to do.
Okay,
that's fine. That's fine. But I'm going to show you how that happens. That's part of what we're going to try to do. Right. So we then, the next Pasuk Tet, which the guy's supposed to say when he brings the Bikurim is, and God brought us to this land, and he gave us this land flowing of milk and honey. And now the next Pasuk, now I have brought the beginning of my fruit that you've given me, God. And that's the end of his declaration. So there's a whole pasuk and a half. I was wrong for it. Six psukim that the guy's supposed to say. And we stopped there. We stop at this point where the print gets smaller. Now, what does that mean? So possibility one is that the original custom was to read the whole thing, and that perhaps when the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed and a majority of Jews, overwhelming majority of Jews were living outside of Israel, and much of our Haggadah got shaped and formed in Bavel, as a result of that, maybe they said, we can't say he brought us to this land, so let's make the focus only on Yetziat Mitzrayim. That's possibility one. And we end when God took us out of Mitzrayim. That's all we tell. We'll tell the other one on Shavuot some other time. The other possibility is that when it said, Ad Shigomer Kol HaParsha, it didn't really mean it. It meant until it finishes the story of Egypt, of leaving Egypt. But the rest of it was not. In any case, we don't incorporate that into our Haggadah. Okay. So now, and right away, I'm going to get you, Kurt, right to where you are there. But if you open up, there's a wonderful site. If you check it out, Kurt, it's called Blue Letter Bible. It's run by Biola College, which is a Bible college here in Southern California. Check it out and go to Deuteronomy 26 and verse 5. And then you can look at about 20 different translations and see how they translate it. I guarantee they'll all translate, "My father was a wandering Aramean." Okay. And those are King James and New King James and RSV and NRSV and NET and CBT, all the famous translations. All right. And if you check JPS, it'll say that too. And NJPS, the new JPS. So it'll say that. Okay. Now, what you're looking at here okay, what you're looking at here is the Sifri. Now, the Sifri is the Midrash Tanaim, which is from the school of Rabbi Akiva, by the way. The Sifri Dvarim is from the school of Rabbi Akiva. And it is the Midrash on Sefer Dvarim, composed by the Tanaim, the sages of the Mishnah. All right, and now, it's running in the sense that it's progressive and it follows the text of the Torah. When you open up Kitavo, you take a look here at the text. It says, and I put the text from the Torah highlighted in yellow and the Midrash in regular text. And notice what the Midrash does. Right? And now, Kurt, I'm going to go halfway to your translation. Only halfway. Now, this is the Midrash working. We talked about Lidrosh. This is Lidrosh. This teaches Shelo Yarad Avinu Yaakov LaAram Ella Almanat LeAbed, which is a strange statement. But it says this teaches that when Yaakov went to Aram, he went there to get lost, to get disappeared. It's as if it's saying that Yaakov maybe had an intent to kind of disappear from the story. And the text blames Lavan as if he was actually the one who tried to destroy Yaakov. Now notice what this Midrash is saying straight. It's saying that Arami Oved Avi does not mean my father was a wandering Aramean, which is the literal translation. The Midrash on it is my father was a disappearing Aramean, meaning my father went to Aram to disappear. What does that mean? Unclear. And then, because it uses the word Arami, who's the most famous Arami in Chumash? Lavan HaArami. So therefore, he said the text is now kind of shifting the blame from Yaakov himself to Lavan and saying Lavan's the one who tried to destroy Yaakov. This is the genesis of the Midrash that then makes its way into our Haggadah. So before skipping a beat, we're going to go to the Haggadah. Here it is. Look at the top line, which introduces our parsha. Say, Ulaman ma bikesh Lavan Arami lasod Yaakov Avinu. Look what Lavan Arami tried to do to Yaakov. Paro harasha lo gazar lazcharim. Paro, the wicked Paro, only made a decree about baby boys. Well, Lavan bikesh lakor takol. Lavan tried to destroy all of it, shenemar, and they quote our pasuk. Now notice how far we've come. From my father was a wandering Aramean, to my father was an Aramean who was trying to disappear, but let's blame Lavan for that, to Lavan trying to kill everybody. He's worse than Paro. Now, where did that happen? So there is a theory out there, which I'm not going to subscribe to, but it's really interesting. And I think it's got it's compelling, or not overly compelling, but it's compelling, which is that the Haggadah, the text of the Haggadah, was all formulated, almost all formulated, except for later texts, it was almost all formulated under Roman oppression. And the sense of the Haggadah is that the story we're telling is not an old story. It's a repeating story.
And what year was that, Rabbi?
What?
When you say under Roman control, about what year?
Well, Roman control starts in the year 63 BCE. Right? So there's a full 150 years or so, more than that, of 130 years of existence under Roman rule or Roman control before the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed. So even those parts of the Haggadah which were developed at the end of the Second Temple period while the Beit HaMikdash was standing, and certainly for the next couple hundred years, were all under Roman rule. And it's pretty clear from some of the texts in the Haggadah that the comments that were being made about the Egyptians were really, and I'll show you, were really being made about the Romans or about the Jews and the Romans. You'll see. So it's not so strange that we'd want to pick Lavan, because take a look at the opening line of the Haggadah again. And you'll see a whole tone set at the beginning of the story, which is an appropriate tone. The tone set for the story should be what the paragraph we say immediately before this is, and the story we're telling is a story of ongoing Jewish history. It's not one event. It happens in every generation. And now watch what they say. Watch this. You see his name? Lavan ha Arami? I'm going to pronounce it a little differently. Lavan ha Romai. This is a way of talking about the Romans without saying Romans. And as such, what we're saying is that their behavior is even worse than Paro's. We're telling us about Paro, but the experience that we're going through right now under the Romans is even worse. And I'll support that claim a little bit later on in the Shiur. This is not too much time. But notice that we start off, and this is the genesis of this is right here in this Midrash, which switches things around to Yaakov and then to Lavan. Now, I want to show you two more things here, and then I want to show you the Midrash as we do it on at the Seder. In the line, Vahisham Legoy Gadol, which I told you we'd come back to, in that first Pasuk, it says, and there he became a great nation. The Midrash is, Melamed Shayu Yisrael Mitzriyanim Sham. This teaches that Am Yisrael was distinguished in Egypt. That, by the way, is exactly the line that makes its way to the Haggadah. From there, makes its way to the Haggadah. Here it is, line B, line D. That's it. It's right there. What does that mean? So if you take a look at here, I'm sorry for scrolling so much back and forth, but that's what we got to do. You take a look, Vahisham Legoy. This is from the Lekach Tov, which is an 11th century Midrashic collection. From somewhere in Byzantium. Vahisham Legoy, Melamed Shayu Yisrael Mitzriyanim Sham. That's exactly what we just said. Am Yisrael was distinguished. What does that mean? So watch this. They're commenting on the Midrash in the Midrash. Perush. Here's what it means. Shayu Nichtavim Bepalatin Shal Yosef. They were written up in the royal records of Yosef, who was the family. And when I say the family, I mean it in soprano style, the family. Lahatrifam lechem lefiataf, to give them food based on their kids, meaning during the famine and afterwards, in Yosef's royal records, it said this family called Yisachar, every kid they have, they get another check of bituach leumi from the government of food every week. Right? Shenemar v'chalkel Yosef v'dachal v'dko beit aviv. When the family came down, it said Yosef fed them. Now watch what this Midrash is gorgeously doing. It's cutting inside of these psukim and telling us the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim or the story of this enslavement. How does it happen that you are the elite, top 1% of Egypt, and you end up as slaves? Once the family had the population explosion, they stopped feeding them. I mean, in the government, Yosef is dead. The government said, okay, that's it. Finish that program. That aid program is over. I have to vote another one in. And then the Egyptians started getting clever, et cetera, et cetera. Davar Acher. Davar Acher means that a later Darshan comes along and says, I've got a different explanation for what that means. We said Vahisham Lagoy means they were distinguished in that they were getting the special food program. Davar Acher Vahisham Lagoy. And now I want you to listen to this as somebody sitting in Roman Palestine in the second century or third century. Malamed Shayu Yisrael Mitzoyanim Sham, Am Yisrael was distinguished. Shayam Malbusham, their clothing. Uma Achalam, their food. Ulishonam, and their language. Mishunim Mina Mitzrim, was different than the Egyptians. I'm going to read that same line with one change. Malamed Shi Yisrael, I'm taking out the word Hayu. Shi Yisrael Mitzoyanim. Shemalbusham umachalam ulishonam mishunim min haromaim. Midrash is way more often a comment on the era of the Midrash than on the era of the text. So what's the Darshan here saying? Am Yisrael is distinguished. How are they distinguished? Because their clothing and their food and their language was different than Egyptians. Wink, wink. Do you understand what I'm telling you, Chevra? So you're not invited to the Roman meals. You can't eat at the Roman meals. You have to dress differently than the way that the Romans dress. And you talk Ivrit or Aramaic, but not Latin or Greek. And this is part of the polemic that's going on inside the Jewish community about accommodation versus insulation, versus insularity. All right. And then he says, Mesumanim ayu biyuduim shen goy levadam. They were marked and known to be a separate nation, chaluk min ha-mitzrim, separate from the Egyptians. Now, we don't have any enough records to know, but all the evidence points to the idea that Egypt at the time was cosmopolitan, had people from all over the world, and they had their own culture, etc. It's a very strange statement to make, but we do know that in the Roman Empire, there was a big emphasis on Hellenization and on acculturation. And for the Jews to stand tough, which ultimately meant standing tough with God and not bowing to the Roman idols, is a very big statement. But it starts with, we eat different food because we don't eat with you. And all of the decrees that we find in the third parak of Masechet Avodah Zarah of not drinking non-Jewish wine without the idolatrous association and not drinking milk that was, etc. All of those things have a broad intent of social separation. And here you see it in this Midrash. So I want to show you one more thing here. There's a lot of material here, and there's a lot to take a look at. But you'll notice that the Midrashim that are used here, when you have a chance to take a look at them, build on the same psukim, but have different Midrashim, have different psukim, have different explanations for the words. Because what is it we're supposed to be doing at the Seder? The text you're looking at right now, which is the text of the Haggadah, is an example. It's not a ritual. It's not like, it's not something to say. It's something to teach. And the main focus has to be these psukim. At our Seder, what I do, because when I'm just a family, we read the pasuk, Armi Oved Avi, and then we discuss it. And we include some of the Midrashim that show up and other Midrashim, and we expand on it. That's what this thing's supposed to be doing. So I've, over this 29 minutes, I've shared the following with you. The Mishnah directs us to do three things: to teach based on the audience's ability, attitude, and knowledge background, to go from the disgrace to the praise, and to use this core text as the focal point, as the springboard for the Midrash of the evening, because it incorporates every major component of Jewish history. Galut, exile, how we get into the mess. Avdut, the oppression, the actual mess. Tfilah, our religious response to call out to God. And Geulah, God redeeming us. That's the story. And the extent to which even these components of the story can then be drawn as parallels to more recent redemptions is a great task. It's a great piece of education. So I wish everybody great hatzlacha. We're going to still meet next week. I want to wish everybody great hatzlacha in the educational enterprise of Haggadah Shel Pesach and Lel HaSeder. And it really should be a phenomenal, not only emotional, but intellectual and stimulating experience of ideas and of interpretation and of relating and applying the lessons from this text to other circumstances and other situations.
Yashkoach.
Thank you very much. Very nice.